Welcome to Sad Pod Live. This is February 6, 2017, where we might be sads, but at least we aren't sad bastards. The sads and former sads joining me on tonight's show are Ben Fortune Price.
Hello.
And newbie Sam Corbin. Is that correct, Sam?
Yep, that's the one. Hello.
And Sam, whereabouts are you located? Because we've already introduced Ben on a previous show. Where are you?
I'm in Camborne, a village just to the west of Cambridge.
Okay, if you want to know more about these sexy beasts and what they look like, etc., get along to the website and check out the cast page for cast photos, bios, and contact info. So, what have we all been doing? I mean, we were supposed to have more on this show. We were supposed to have Mike Ryan Simonovich, but sick kids, Ross Bell, also sick kids, and Kevin Clem, who may jump on later. So, Ben, what have you been doing since the last time you were on the show?
We've got a little girl who's 2 years old now, who was probably only 6-8 months last time. So that's been very, very busy having a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old and a 6-year-old. Because we home educate all three, we're all kind of together at home all the time anyway, or we're out and about different places. Just kind of watching Dorothy develop and trying to help her with all the little things she wants to do, getting Logan and Evie involved with a few different groups and things. They've got drama clubs now and beavers and youth clubs. And so life doesn't stop at the moment. Really busy.
No, you have been really busy, and we've never been able to get the UK group off and running. But I'm hoping that now we've got a few extra people, including Sam, that we can. Now, Sam, what's your situation with kiddos, mate? Well, for one, you're a stay-at-home dad. How long have you been doing the stay-at-home dad thing, and how old's your child?
Little girl's 14 months-ish now, and so I've been doing the stay-at-home dad since she was born. We moved down to Cambridge for my girlfriend's job and kind of got knocked up at the same time. And so when we moved, I've not had a job down here.
Just to let people know, you were previously a photographer, right?
Yeah, previously a photographer and then involved in project management and new store openings before that.
And now you take care of poo.
Yeah, lots of it.
Always tons of that.
Yeah, we've just been through one of the explosive periods, and that's been, that's probably been the lowest point so far.
Oh, look, mate, I had one when my wife was away traveling, and I took a photo of it, but I deleted it shortly after that because, well, let's face it, who wants to remember that?
Yeah, we had a week like that with Dorothy about a week and a half ago, where it was just nonstop following her about with cloths and disinfectant, and you just think, oh, I just want this to end now. It's just horrible.
It's amazing how exciting and how fulfilling being a stay-at-home dad is when most of your job includes cleaning up poop. Anyway, before we get too bogged down in something that, let's face it, who wants to hear about excrement? Tonight's show. I say tonight's, but actually it's the afternoon as far as I'm concerned because I'm in Florida. But it's the evening over there in the UK, and we're going to focus on everyday tech gadgets that we use to keep ourselves sane and our kids alive. Now, I originally thought of this show as tech devices to help take care of baby and what's useful and what's not, because around that time I had a baby and we were constantly buying devices, constantly buying knickknacks, things that we thought would be useful in taking care of our child. Now, one particular device I looked at, which was a Liana Omo Clip, I think it's called. It was a portable heart rate monitor that you actually stuck on your child's chest to see if they were breathing. It was one of those things for people who were paranoid about cot death. I think it was about $67, and we bought it because, you know, it was the best of the best of the best. Anyway, I read up on it, I understood it, but it was just too much of a pain in the ass, and to be honest, the reviews about false positives had me worried that we would spend our lives thinking that our child was dying. So we never used it. In fact, we took it back to Babies R Us and cashed it in, which in itself is a story because we forgot that we'd purchased it from Amazon. Anyway, One of the better devices we bought, also for babies, was the Philips Advent Decked audio monitor that we haven't looked back from. It's one of the best things we got, audio only, but we can keep track of our child when something happens, and it shuts off when there's no noise, and we still use it today. If you want to know what it is, it's in the show notes. But again, there are always those devices that we buy that we love, and those devices that we buy that we hate, and that we just stick in the garage and forget about. So I'm going to talk to these two guys about the things that we bought that we've loved and the things that we've bought that we've hated. Now, they don't necessarily have to be electronic. They can be as simple as beds, car seats, things that the modern age has offered us to take care of our children. Now, I'm going to throw it out to you first, Sam. Did you get a bunch of shit when your child was born? And what did you get?
We didn't get that much shit. I mean, we were quite lucky. My brother's got a little girl who's only a year older than ours, and sort of my girlfriend's family have got young kids, so we had a lot of advice on what's good to get, what to avoid, and those little bits that, you know, where you buy something and then you go, ah, shit, that's wrong because, or we needed one that did something else. So a lot of our stuff, we've not bought that much that's baby specific that's ended up in the bin. Well, strangely, an audio monitor is the only thing that we bought that we've never used.
Sorry, what was that?
An audio monitor. So, you know how you were saying, like, the decked one's the thing that you've never looked back from. So I don't know whether it's just we're in a new build house, so we can like hear through the walls everything that's going on in the rest of the house. So it ended up being kind of pointless.
See, I never really thought about that because us being in the US, house sizes tend to be much bigger. So monitoring a kiddo is a little bit different, you know, because our daughter is way on the other end of the house. But we didn't go for a video monitor. So do you have any sort of a monitor or do you just listen?
Yeah, we've got we've repurposed a lot of stuff. So we had like a little CCTV camera, like a Wi-Fi one. And so we've just stuck that up in her room. So if we hear her, we can look in on her. But it doesn't tell us if she's moving around. If she makes a noise, it doesn't automatically say she's making a noise. Generally, we can just hear it in the house. And then if it's a case of you hear her grumbling, you can look in on her. And is she awake? Is she woken up? And is she doing stuff? Or is she just having a little grumble and going back to sleep? But that wasn't something that we bought for her. That's just something that we had knocking around, not being used.
Because we bought a Foscam video monitor, but we got it when my daughter was starting to get out of her cot. Like, my daughter's 2.5 now. So when she was going through that dangerous stage and we really wanted to keep her under video surveillance to make sure she didn't hurt herself, that was what we got. Now, what about you, Ben? Did you go down the video monitor route or did you just listen through the walls or what was the situation there?
No, with us, I mean, we've got a lot better at this whole getting tech thing and or getting stuff for children as we've had three. When our eldest was being expected, though, we got tons of stuff that, to be honest, went to charity shops or the bin. We had bottle warmers. We had a steam sterilizer that were all useless in one way or another. We had a sensor mat, which was a Tommy Tippy one, but it was one of the older ones. And that just went off all the time. It just never recognized that there was a baby on it or near it. So that was it wasn't a video monitoring one, but we didn't tend to need that because Logan was in a co-sleeper bed next to ours, so there'd always be one of us about. And again, we've got a new build, and yeah, you can hear babies through, you know, not just our babies, you could hear babies in another room.
So, but the Tommy Tippy thing you mentioned, was that a breathing monitor?
Yes, yeah, not a video one. It was just it's like a mat that you put underneath the mattress, and then it, yeah, just detects them breathing.
Well, that's similar to like the Omeclip that I had. That was designed to listen or to pay attention to your child breathing. The idea being that if your child stopped breathing, the alarm would go off and you'd rush in. One of the reasons we didn't install it is because of the false positives. And you'd live in absolute fear that your child was dying. In fact, I think it would just give you a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, well, the best thing that we ever did was go on holiday and forget the monitor because we thought, we haven't got the monitor. We really rely on it, even though it goes off with false positives every 5 minutes. So we got a different one, which was an Angel Care sensor mat, and that one was perfect and was perfect for all of the children from then on.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to shut you off there, Ben, but we have Kevin Clem from California just joined us. Kevin, do you want to say hello?
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
As is the nature of live shows, we always have things to do, and some people just join us a little bit later than expected. Now, Kevin?
It is new here. I had to feed my kids.
What did you feed them to? Well, who did you feed them to?
I would like to feed them to, you know, vicious beasts sometimes, but right now, I just fed them chicken and rice and then put them to bed.
You got sickos, right?
I have one, yeah. My 8-year-old is home with a fever, so... And my 3-year-old is just rabid, but that's just his normal state.
Well, we've got the UK guys here, Kevin. We've got Ben Fortune Price from the UK. We've also got Sam Corbin, Sam being new. And we were talking about the tech that keeps our kids alive and us sane. But we were discussing things like audio and video monitors and breathing monitors. Did you ever use such things when you had your kiddos?
We had a baby monitor, like a radio baby monitor, and we never could get the dang thing to work. With our first child, we gave up when she was, I don't know, a couple months old and never looked back at that thing. We never tried again. So we lived at the time in a pretty small house. So there was no avoiding a child that was up and screaming or needed attention. She was right there.
So what was the most useful thing you've ever bought, Kevin, you know, tech-wise for your kiddos? You know, like I just mentioned that I have an audio monitor that I love because it's sensor operated, you know, and whenever my daughter's losing her mind, I could hear her, but I didn't want to have that constant video. I certainly didn't want to have something that monitored breathing and gave me false positives. Is there anything that you used that you absolutely loved?
Well, there's two things. I would give big points to, we had one of those incredibly expensive baby swings that, you could change, you know, if it was lateral or horizontal, whichever way you wanted it to swing. You could add vibration to it. You could do that in a pattern. You could make it random. It had white noise and music. And that thing was a lifesaver for us, for both of our kids. It just really helped them calm down and nap.
Who is the brand?
Boy, I think it was a Fisher Price, but I'm not 100% sure.
Now I'm going to throw it to you, Sam. Do you have a swing that you live by?
A swing that we live by? No.
Is it not a big thing in the UK to have swings for the kiddos and stick them in the front room and let them rock them to sleep?
I think it is, but it's the cost of them. I mean, they're hundreds of quids, aren't they, to get one that moves around. We had like a little baby bouncer, so one that bounced on it, almost like a rocking chair, bounced like that, which was never a massive hit. But I mean, baby enjoyed it for a bit.
But that's super, super low tech. What about you, Ben? Did you go electronic and have a swing of some sorts?
We had, it was like a little bed that moved backwards and forwards a little bit. And we found that, and yeah, you can swing it round so it'll go laterally as well. I think we found with all of ours that it would be something that would be a real fleeting interest for them. So they might be happy in it for 20 minutes or so, but then, you know, that would be it. They'd be bored and then they wouldn't really want to go back in it for a week or more. So, that was one that I think got given to one of the family.
We had a Mickey Mouse swing. It was battery operated, but it was one of the few ones that you could actually plug in. It sprung three different directions. It cost about $35 or something. And I live by it. We used to stick my daughter in there and she used to go off to sleep in next to no time. We had like three or four different devices. And for some reason, everything in America vibrates. Everything. I don't know if it gives them some form of concussion and knocks them out. But whatever it is, like we had a vibrating device in our Graco pack and play. We had a vibrating device in some mid-sized cot thing called a Graco little lounger. And we also had a Munchkin Lullavibe vibrating mattress pad that we stuck in the bed. And honestly, if we didn't have those things, I'm not sure I would have made it past my daughter getting to 1 year old.
My daughter, when she was little, for the first a good 3 months of her life, she would only sleep in the car while it was in motion. You couldn't put her in the car and turn it on and sit there. You had to be moving. So my wife and I slept in shifts, taking her for rides. And it wasn't until we found that swing, which I want to say ours was somewhere in the neighborhood of $350 or so, that she finally would sleep not in the car.
I think I'm underestimating the cost, but I'm sure it wasn't more than $90. It was a Mickey Mouse swing produced, or a Minnie Mouse precious pedal swing produced by an affiliate of Disney. But it used to swing three different directions, and the big key for it was that there was a plug-in, because you can go through batteries like nobody's business. In fact, the other thing that we had to have for tech was we had to have an Energizer multi-size battery charger. Now, Ben, did you have any tech that you used for tricks to get your kiddos to sleep, or did you just rely on good management?
The most useful thing that I found for that, and it's probably one of the cheapest things you can get, is a wrap that just goes around you, just like a big stretchy fabric wrap, and you put it all around yourself, tie it all up, stick the baby in, walk 4 or 5 paces around the room, baby is asleep. Worked a treat with all of us. And it means that you can get on and do stuff, and I can go and tidy and things like that. And the baby's just fast asleep on me. And that was just hands down the best thing we ever got.
And was that a particular brand name?
I don't think it was. No, I think it was just a, like, if you imagine, just like a large circular plastic wrap that you kind of tie up. So basically one long strip of fabric. And my wife put a big superhero cartoon panel on there so that it looked nice as well. And kids love going in those.
We bought a bunch of swaddling cloths when, my baby first came home.
Yeah.
And I just found them to be an absolute nightmare to put together. And I have one photo where I call my daughter a burrito, because that's exactly what she looks like. And I was a bit worried that I would overpack her, and before too long, I would have her squeezing at both ends, just like a burrito. Now, Sam, did you have any special tech that you used to use to get your daughter to sleep? Or right now, actually, for that matter, because your daughter's still 15 months or something, right?
Yeah, 14, 15 months. Well, same as Ben, I'm a big fan of baby wearing and like the wraps. So tried out a cheap one and then spent like nearly £100 on one from Germany. I can't remember the brand, but it's one of the woven ones that doesn't stretch. Mm-hmm. And that is a case of, it just holds them to your chest. Absolutely fantastic. Can walk around with them, and it is the sort of magic sleepy dust where they can hear your heartbeat. And she was straight out. She was always happy like that.
But yeah, they got no choice, have they, when they're all wrapped up like that? So, well, there is nothing else to do.
But the best thing, and now every day it gets used from the day that she was born, and it gets used 2-3 times a day, is I put an AirPlay speaker in her bedroom. So we moved here just before we gave birth. So sort of the house was always, that her room was always designated as baby's room. So I put a ceiling speaker in, and a little amplifier in the loft, and a AirPlay receiver, so like just a Apple AirPort thing. And so you can stream music from any of our phones or computer or anything like that, and just playing music. And that has been the thing.
What about you, Kevin? Do you do that with death metal playing in your son's bedroom?
We have a Amazon Echo, and my daughter's 8, so she's plenty old enough to figure that stuff out, but my 3-year-old loves the thing. And yes, he is one to run into the room and say, "Alexa, play heavy metal." And so we listen to a lot of heavy metal because of him.
So does he bang his head against the wall, and before you know it, the concussion, he's out?
Yep, there it goes.
Okay, let's move on to other techie things, because the bedroom is one of the first places you start. Everybody who looks for something to do with kids and tech, it's baby monitors and vibration devices and that sort of thing. And you mentioned something earlier, Ben. You brought up bottle warmers, and that was the other thing we looked at. We were storing breast milk, so we had baby pumps and things like that. And my wife and I were looking at 3 or 4 different systems. That's also a thing. They can boggle you with systems for baby pumps and baby storage and all that sort of thing. Did you ever get sucked into buying a brand for baggies or breast milk and things like that, or did you just avoid it?
Well, with our eldest, Logan, he had a cleft lip and palate when he was born, so we knew that we weren't going to be able to well, we were going to be able to store little bits of breast milk, but he wasn't going to be able to breastfeed. So we got a bottle warmer and steam sterilizer, and it just, I think it probably lasted about 3 or 4 weeks before we said, no, I think we'll just sterilize everything the old fashioned way, and we'll warm things up by, I'll just boil up, you know, boil a kettle and put some water in a bowl and plop the bottle in there. So we kind of went from high-tech to low-tech really quickly.
Well, I'm going to pass this off to Kevin and Sam. I'm going to start with you, Sam. Did you get suckered in by this?
I wouldn't say we got suckered in. We liked the sterilizer. That was something that was great. The day's stuff got washed up, put in the sterilizer, it went on overnight and ready the next day. But that came with a bottle warmer. And that, I think, we tried twice. And it was so painfully slow. It's like the Tommy Tippy one that seems to be everywhere in the UK at the moment.
Yeah, I think that may well have been the one we had.
Yeah, it kind of came in the pack. And that's in a cupboard somewhere. And it is, we did the same thing. Boil a kettle, sit it in the hot water, warms up much faster, much more efficient, and just good to go. But we actually really liked the sterilizer because it was like a one-button job done. Everything's done at the same time and it stayed sterile until you started using the stuff the next day, so we didn't have to even think about it.
Yeah.
Now, what about you, Kevin? Did you have a system?
Yeah, we did. We got roped into a particular brand of bottle and sterilizer and warmer and everything with the first child. And we ended up kind of abandoning that with the second, which I think is pretty normal, and went back to the old-fashioned way. When we warmed up the bottle went into a pot of warm water and warmed it up that way. It just seemed more efficient. And we stopped using the sterilizer because our washing machine had a sterilize mode for bottles. So we just bought more bottles and did it that way.
Okay. Did you do the freezing or did you just do fresh constant?
We did the freezing. We did have to do the freezing.
That's like us. We got roped into, I think, is the Medela set. And they were like 6 and 3 ounce bottles. And I had like, I don't know how many of those things I had. They were incredibly expensive. In fact, I think the reason that my daughter's not going to college is because we bought so many of those bloody Medela baby milk bottles. And the other thing that we had, we originally went for a reusable system for freezing milk, which the first time it leaked all over the freezer and we lost like 12 ounces or more of milk. You guys probably know, if you lose breast milk, it's like losing gold, especially if your wife's not a heavy producer to begin with. So, you know, we had to make sure that they were double sealed, super duper baggies, and they were disposable, but we kind of mixed and matched there. And we had a little device called a Kindy Cozy bottle warmer that used to warm the milk just right, that I loved. But again, it was super expensive and I'm not sure it was any better than just, you know, hot water and massaging the baggie in a Pyrex dish or something.
So did we all do sort of expressed milk and then refeeding, or was anybody doing formula?
We had to supplement with formula with both kids. My wife just didn't produce enough. Once they started eating more than a few ounces, we had no choice.
One of the things that I would have definitely gone for as a gadget is, again, it's the Tommy Tippy one that's advertised everywhere, is that one button. It dispenses it. It sterilizes the powder. It puts in the right amount of filtered water at just the right temperature. And all you do is put a lid on it and you're good to go. But we would use an express milk, so obviously there was no point in that. But that's one gadget that I would have wanted to buy in a heartbeat if we were using formula from day one.
Does it take care of your kids, mate? Because if it does, I'm out there to buy it right now.
No. One thing it doesn't do, but I think like 3 o'clock in the morning, if I can't imagine having to have tried like trying to make formula up. That was the nice thing about like the express milk. It's out of the fridge, it's being warmed and your job done.
See, but if your machine's doing all that work for you, then you don't have the time to pour yourself a finger or two of scotch while you're warming up the breast milk.
Yeah, we had to use formula and expressed with Logan, but with the other two, Natasha just breastfed them both. And in fact, Dorothy, she's just turned 2 and she's still feeding. So we're hoping any time now she's going to decide to stop.
Now We used to supplement in the evenings, and it was another way we tried to get 6 months supply together to make sure that we could cover the first 6 months with majority breast milk. But I don't know what it's like in the UK, and it's certainly different to the way it was when I was growing up. But the formula here is just shake in the bottle and you're done. Is that not the same in the UK?
I think you can get it sort of like bottle ready.
Yeah, you just put it into a bottle with some cold water and bingo, you're done. Dino DNA.
I mean, the stuff here is like powdered, and you got to put it in with boiling water that's a certain temperature. So reading the instructions, it's like boil the kettle with at least a liter in it, leave it to stand for 30 minutes, and then it's the right temperature to pour in the bottle, and then add your 7 scoops of powder.
You can get the small cartons of formula, but that's a very easy way to go broke quickly because they'll cost you a huge amount for what they are.
Oh, really? Yeah, they weren't that expensive here, but we live in America where we have freedom.
I see a business opportunity. Maybe we should ship some of our formula over there for a premium.
I believe there was actually a scheme where they were doing that recently, particularly because a lot of those formulas are specific to children's needs. I mean, we talk about tech in terms of having bottles and things like that, but some of the investment in the science of baby formula production, if they put as much effort into solving cancer would have been done decades ago. I don't know if you've seen how many different formula types there are for the different spit-up versions and things like that, but you can go insane trying to find out the one that's suitable for you.
Well, there's several that are prescription too. It's crazy.
We've been through prescription stuff because our little girl's sort of allergic to cow's milk protein. So we've been through hydrolyzed and this, that, and the other, and sort of talking with the doctors, it's a case, well, we'll start you on this. If this doesn't work, there are like 6 more stages that we could have gone through of prescribed milk.
That's crazy. It seems that the tech that goes into formula production, with all the allergies, etc., those children, if they'd been born 100 years ago, they would have starved to death. Look, I'm going to move it into the lounge now. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm going to go back to the poo topic that we started with. Tech in nappies and things like that. The world of nappies has changed a lot since I was a kid. Did anybody adopt anything that was unique when it came to covering their baby's bum? We'll let you take that one, Sam. Did you go disposable? Did you go terry toweling? What did you do? Did you just follow them around with the scoop?
Went disposable from the outset. There was never going to go terry toweling.
You environmental vandal.
Yeah, sue me.
To you, Ben. What about you, mate?
Tried disposables. Didn't work out at all. Our little one had really, really bad chemical burns from disposable nappies, so we went with just washable nappies for all 3 of ours, and probably one of the best things I think we've ever done.
So did you use any particular tech in the nappy field, Kev, or as you say, dappers?
We started both the kids with something called a Z diaper, which was like a pad inside a washable cover, and you could flush this pad out, you could flush it down the toilet.
Z-O-G.
Z is in Zed.
Okay.
It just got to the point where it wouldn't contain either of the children's fury as they got older, and we switched to disposables.
See, I use G diapers, which is an Australian brand. I think they're located up in Portland, but they're from Aussies or New Zealanders or both. And with me, it was the same thing. I had a disposable pad, but I ended up buying them in bulk through Amazon. And I've still got boxes of them in the garage right now. So whatever environmental benefit that there was from these flushable wipes that my wife researched, and that was the limit that for my wife. She wouldn't do terry towelings. So with these flushable pads, and I'm still trying to unload them. But I think they're good if you commit crimes or something. They're good for wiping up blood, but otherwise their use is pretty limited. But that was as far as we went with the tech. And then we ended up just going to disposables, which I hate. I really hate them. But what can you do? Well, I'm going to take this to the rooms now. You mentioned that you had a swing, Kevin. Did you have any other sorts of devices that you would use to keep the child happy? We had, I think it was called an Exosaucer, and it had some things that you rattle and bang, and you know the kitty could jump up and down. And we used to stick my daughter in that. And then the next step, of course, was you could move to a jumperoo. Anyway, did you have anything like that?
Yeah, we had some sort of jumper that it was kind of held up on these 4 cloth-like springs, and it just let them bounce around in it and made a lot of noise. It made a lot of noise. Buttons they could push, and as they moved in it, it played music. It was fine. It was just loud.
Any of them you thought were particularly good, though?
Nothing that stands out. There was the, what are they called? The little foam chairs Did you have one of those?
A Bumbo, I think they're called. Is that right?
Yeah. Those things are great.
So you had the Bumbo?
Yeah, we had a Bumbo.
Okay, we bought one of them, but we ended up taking it back. What about you, Sam? Did you have anything in the front room that you just couldn't live without?
Yeah, we had the Bumbo as well. Perfect.
But did you have anything like, we had this Exosaucer, and I think it cost, I want to say it was like $120, and it had a lion and jungle animal pieces, and you banged on them and bounced. But my daughter was vomiting quite a bit at the time. So there was more cheese. You talked about cheese earlier, Ben, and making cheese. I made a significant amount of cheese in my Exosaucer.
We have like a little
problem with those is that, yeah, they do attract every fluid that a child can produce.
Go on, Sam.
Yeah, we had a little baby walker. So like a jumperoo without the bounce. So just by red kite. So four casters on the bottom, and she could just totter around in that. And that had, again, really noisy buttons on the front. But that was the amazing bit of baby tech because it had two volume settings. So it had a loud setting, a quiet setting, and an off. And so few toys seem to come with a fucking off switch.
Yeah,
I think that should be a law should be passed that you can't make any baby toy without an off switch.
Now, the music's really good the first time you hear it. Mind you, about the 1500th time you hear it, you want to kill something.
Welcome to our learning farm. There's so much to show you. Shapes and colors, music too. There's so much to do. Woo!
Okay, if we have any psychologists listening, just give Sam a call. I think he might need some help.
I hate that fucking song.
The worst bit is the toys that hide in the room and will decide to turn themselves on 3-4 hours after the children have gone to bed.
Oh, demon toys.
Yeah.
Did you have any demon toys, Kevin?
No, I don't think we did. Nothing that I got really good about opening up these things and cutting the speaker wire so that they would make flashing lights. So, no, nothing I think that woke them up.
We had a couple. We had a snail. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a Fisher-Price snail that you can roll along the ground. And that thing, it was given some beatings. I mean, it was given some real hidings. But that was one of those things, because it had been bashed around so much, I think the wires were a little bit loose. And every now and again, you know, it would go off and you would just, do we have a ghost? Do we have a poltergeist? No, it's that fucking snail. What did you do with your tech, Ben? I mean, did you have anything like that? Did you have any bounces or anything that jiggled or kept the baby captive while you could go off and, you know, vacuum the house?
Yeah, we had one of those Bumbos, and then we've had a couple of jumperoos. Fisher-Price, I think, both of ours were Fisher-Price. We also had a Tigger door bouncer. That you kind of clip onto the top of the door frame and then put the baby in, and it's got great big springs, and the baby can just bounce away in the doorway. There's quite good fun. One of the best things actually, when our eldest was young, we had a huge baby pen. When I say huge, I mean it was the whole living room. So he basically had the whole living room space with all of his toys in it. And he could just play in there, and he never had to worry about him getting to anything that he wasn't supposed to.
So given the straitjacket you used to put him in, and you've also stuck him in a baby pen, if Heavy does commit a crime between now and, let's say, the age of 40, he'll be well suited to be like Pendridge.
He'll fit right in.
He'll be like, this is a doddle. Now, it's funny you mentioned that, because I had a thing called a little play zone. And I remember ordering it online, but you have to double check here because so much of them come from China and you've got to be careful about leads and things like that. And I also had some sport phone mats and I did exactly the same thing, but it was incredibly expensive. I bought two of these things and I had them rigged up in such a way that it covered the entire lounge room. And I could basically just, you know, put my daughter in there and I knew that she was safe within the confines of that. What about you? Did you have any sort of a pen system set up for yours, Kevin?
We just used baby gates and took one room and basically made it so she couldn't get out. So same idea. We did buy these big foam blocks to put around our fireplace. I remember that, which she still found ways to hurt herself, you know, on the foam blocks that were supposed to protect her. So, yeah, and those baby gates, I've been trying to get rid of them forever. Finally, somebody came and got them. I just gave them away. It was
one of the things that you, when you buy something, especially if you pay retail and you don't go secondhand, because I was going to ask how many of us bought secondhand and how many have actually just, you know, researched and paid retail. Those, I was just looking up that the little play zones that we, thing that I had, when I bought them new, they were $110 each. And I had two of them. And the mats themselves, I think I bought four packs and they were like $30 each for these four packs, which I still have. The baby gates, I was lucky enough to sell. And I think I sold them for like, you know, 10 cents on the dollar or something like that. It felt like that at least. And again, when you come to sell secondhand baby things, it's really difficult. No one wants to buy secondhand. So Sam, secondhand on you.
A bit of a mix of the two. We've got some secondhand toys, but stuff like baby gates, it was more a case of finding the thing that was perfect to fit the house, as opposed to finding something secondhand that would do. So, I mean, we've got IKEA baby gates that have been recalled, I think, because apparently they're too easy to open, but we still struggle with them. But they like fold up. So it's like, rather than the gate that swings, they disappear and then they're a couple of inches into the wall and that's it. So they're really unobtrusive because we've got two sets of stairs.
Now, the other big investment is strollers and car seats.
Don't get me started on
Well, I need to get you started because somebody needs to talk. Start.
Oh, I think we have three different types of strollers in our garage right now.
Oh.
See, strollers I wasn't too bad with. We got one set that was one of those combination systems. So when she was tiny, car seat could go straight on this base with wheels on it and you could wheel her about and it's a little thing to go to the shops with. And then it's got a pram set to it that we still use now. And that's something where sort of we had the advice of people that had recently had kids and said that these things were great. This is what you want. And so we did that and that worked amazingly well. And we're still using that same stroller now.
But you only had one?
Yep, just one. I mean, now we've got a tiny little travel one that just stays in the boot. It almost looks like a toy pram. Just like sort of it reminds me of the stuff that I'd have been pushed around in the 80s. Sort of tiny little lightweight one. But yeah, only had the one pram that was from Mother Care combination. You had a car seat. Yeah, so it came with a car seat, a pram that then folded up in a way that was a pushchair, which was... would face the front or face the back. And yeah, still using it and it will still get used for another couple of years.
Well, hang on a second. You were saying, don't get me started. It sounds to me like you're very happy with your purchases.
Oh, the pram, that was amazing. But then when they grow out of the car seat bit of it, that's where it all goes tits up. Because in Europe, I don't know what the legislation or what the sort of guidelines are like in the US, but there's like a new Europe-wide gauging system on baby car seats. And it's gone from a bit of a free-for-all where they just go 0, 1, 2, 3 as a grade to you've now got ISO fixings and it's eye size where you've got to be rearward facing up to about 4 years.
Now, what about you? So I understand what you're saying there is that you have to buy multiples and multiples again.
Well, no. I mean, it's a case of we've got like three different systems running. So you've got, you go and look for a car seat that's rearward facing at a year old, but there are ones that are rearward facing at a year old that will only do them to a year and a half. You've got some that will do them to 2 years. You can put your baby in a front. It's still sitting in the garage waiting now till she's a bit bigger, almost like a big booster seat for a baby that's a year old. And it looks, I mean, she still looks tiny in it. So we've ended up with a Cybex rear facing now until she's four, but the headache is trying to actually find out what they do and what bit of legislation they tie in with, because like I say, you've got ones that claim to be like this new version eye size but only keep them rearward facing until they're two, and if you're spending another £300-400 for 12 months of rearward facing and then they're going to be facing the front anyway, it's trying to make sure that it's a wise purchase, and it's taken me 6 months to try and get my head around it.
We've got the best one for that, I reckon.
You don't have a car?
No, we've got... There's one, it's called a Joey, J-O-I-E, a Stages car seat. So it goes from when they're about one to... does rear facing until they're four, and then it turns around and and then that'll be okay until they're seven with all of the new legislation.
Well, that's I know they're much more strict in the UK and Europe, because here basically 2 years old and the you know flipping front ways, and I know you tend to be a little bit more cautious in the UK and the in Europe.
Well, you still can do that. That's the I think that's the bit that gives or gave me a headache is you've still got all the car seats that are they're a year old, they can be frontward facing.
Oh, so you've got dream like of it, so
no, but you've got all of these different ones where you can do it, and they're still selling the ones that strap in with a seatbelt and you can do front facing from a year.
Okay, now Kevin, why is it that you have three different pushes in your garage?
Well, we had the convertible one that you could put the baby car seat, you know, carrier. We had the infant seat that converted into like a little carrier, and that would snap into the top of it, and then it became a stroller when they were older. So we had that one. And then because we would go places and my wife didn't want to haul around the great big stroller, we also had an umbrella stroller, just a little basic folding one. And then we also had a separate jogging stroller because I wanted to go out and run with the kids and you can't really push the four-wheeled little wheeled stroller. So we have three different types of strollers in our garage.
And the thing is, they're pretty much dead. I mean, it's not like you can sell them on. I mean, you can pass them on, but, you know.
I will say this. I have a Bob jogging stroller that I bought secondhand. I bought it used. And when I bought it, I don't think it had ever been used. It still had packaging on it. I paid $100 for it. And it retails new for almost $600. So
would you say, though, that that's more of a sports purchase if it's out for jogging? I mean, I've got a rower that's in the garage that I've never used.
You know, you could use it, but because it's a jogging stroller, like the front wheel, it doesn't collapse down all that small. And like the front wheel is locked forward. It doesn't turn.
Some of them are locked. You can lock them or you can spin them. It depends. Now, but the thing is, you don't have to deal with Disneyland, Sam, and Kevin does. And having the biggest, baddest stroller at Disneyland is essential. In fact, if we could put guns on them, we would.
You almost need to.
Have you ever been through Disney and not, you know, especially with a small stroller? You're asking for trouble.
It's bad. It's real bad. I mean, it's like LA traffic, but with, you know, toddlers and strollers.
I've been through three strollers. And fortunately, the return system in the US is so amazing that if you have something wrong with them, we could swap them out. So we've actually paid for one but had three. And the one we have now is a Graco, because everything here is Graco. And it had the seat that you could, you know, was for the infant. And we ended up busting. I called Graco. Graco replaced it. But my daughter was too old for it, so I just sold it brand new. We have the stroller. The stroller got a tear in it. I called them and they replaced that. But there's a picture of me at Disney World when my daughter was 5 months old, and I'm standing behind the stroller and it just looks enormous with Spaceship Earth in the background. And I think I wrote at the time, it's now time for me to get my own back against all those bastards that ran me over when we were single or when we were childless. And we also went for another Graco 4. It's called a Graco Forever all-in-one car seat, which is the one that we have now. And that's the one that changes to a booster seat and everything else. But I understand your pain in it, Sam, because the knowing exactly what to get and knowing what to get with the idea of keeping your child alive is probably most critical with the car seat.
And they say you can't put a price on your kid's safety.
Well, you can.
But let's face it,
frowned upon.
Yeah. But even if you don't put a price on it, there's the ones that you can get and then the ones that are just way out of your price range that you can't buy. And then you look for it, you ask for advice, and then you read reviews. And then we've got like the Witch Reports in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I signed up for those. And then you start reading there. They do sort of far more in-depth testing and full-on crash testing. And you read some of the reports on those and you just like, no, I can't buy that for my kid. I just can't put her in that, having just read the report on it.
It's like buying a secondhand car seat. People do it, but that's one item. When you know, when we're talking about items that you would buy new versus secondhand, there's no way I would ever buy a secondhand car seat, and no one's ever going to buy mine, because when my daughter first was put into it, she used to projectile vomit. So there is still cheese in there, still good aged cheese. Okay, let's move on to toys, because toys are another techie thing. And I am the opinion that toys for children, or especially toys for smaller children, are completely worthless, no matter how many bells and dill, you know, and dinging noises and flashing lights there is. They're kind of useless. But one of the things I remember my wife wanted to get was to duplicate a mobile phone, but my daughter wasn't having any of it. And that was one of the things that used to go off and be demonic. Is there any toys that anybody here has bought the tech-wise that you looked at it and you just had to have it and your child said, nah? So, Ben, toys, dinging toys.
Well, we've got our little one at the moment is really into Peppa Pig toys. So my whole lounge at the moment is just covered in those. And if you give her anything else to play with, she'll just kind of turn her nose up and think, no. Actually, I've got my own favorite toys that I like, and I don't really care what you're giving me.
Now, but have you, I mean, we all go through multiple toys. I mean, how many of them do you think have been misses? What sort of percentage?
Maybe 30, 40%. Just end up being played with once or twice. And then once a year, there's a huge rush to get rid of all of the stuff that we've accumulated over the year and get it to the charity shop before more stuff comes in at Christmas. We've got all of the birthdays around Christmas. So we got one in December, then we got Christmas, then we got two in January. So we've got one time of year where everybody buys the kids stuff. And then normally November, we're just clearing stuff out constantly. And the charity shop sees me every day with bags of stuff.
40% seems incredibly high, Kevin. Would you say that you have a 40% success rate on toys?
No, I would say I have about a 10% success rate on toys.
Oh, actually, but do you said it was a 40% or a 60% success rate, 40% fail? I can't remember. Which was it, Ben?
I was 40% fail, I reckon.
Okay, so 60% success rate. And 60% success rate, Kevin, is that ridiculously high?
That's ridiculously high. I don't care how cool the toy is when I buy it, thinking that they're going to love it. Thinking that, this is exactly what they want. It'll be played with once or twice, and then it'll be dropped in favor of an empty paper towel holder or a cardboard box or the, 99-cent toy from McDonald's. It's whatever, no matter how expensive it is, it doesn't seem to hold their attention ever. They go for some random other thing that you never would have thought of.
Biggest, most expensive piece of shit that you've bought?
Some stupid doll. I think it was called a Gabby girl that was supposed to talk and play back and play games, and it had LED eyes behind glasses that blinked and looked around. I want to say it was like $120, and I think it was played with for maybe a grand total of 20 minutes.
That's my experience too. Sam, biggest, most expensive piece of shit, and do you agree with that percentage success rate?
I was thinking about it and I'm just like, oh no, but we haven't had that much that's been a fail. But just looking at all the toys, and there's a lot that just gets ignored. So yeah, I would say sort of 60% success rate, but she's been going through cycles. So some of the stuff that she's ignored for a couple of months has suddenly become interesting. But just the other day, I bought the worst toy there's been stuff she's ignored. There's been stuff she's not that interested in. We've gone through the whole like trying to buy fake remote controls so she doesn't hide ours, but that doesn't work. But I bought it was only 30 quid, but it's probably one of the most expensive toys I've bought. A little air thing that like holds a ball up in the air because they've got them at the soft play center and stuff, and she likes those. So I put this out, pressed the button, it blasted this ball up into the air, and then she didn't stop crying sort of for a solid 10 minutes. She thought it was the devil toy. And proper tears rolling down her face. I was the worst father in the world. How could I possibly think that was good? So she just ran away from it, hid, and bawled her eyes out. So, yeah, that's back in the box already.
I can only assume that the reason that your percentage success rate is so high is because you obviously don't buy enough toys because you're not American, and there's just such an enormous volume that comes into our house. But yeah, I can go through things that I thought would keep my daughter occupied, because that's the whole goal. And one of them was this stand-up play thing that you could press buttons on and all the rest of it. And my daughter just threw it around. It was just became a projectile. It became dangerous, in fact. It did occasionally play Spanish, but you know, it was another one of those things that had been dropped so often that it would play Spanish at the most inopportune times that you thought you had a Spanish ghost.
You do live in Florida, so a Spanish ghost would be culturally appropriate.
It certainly would be, especially where I am, because I live near the Malacompra Trail, which is actually an old Spanish settlement. But I digress. Recently, we just bought a tent for the room that I thought would be gangbusters, and that was about $100. And I think my daughter's been in about 3 or 4 times. Maybe she's just too young for it, though. So yeah, but no, 60%. God, if we had a 60% success rate, there wouldn't be enough room in this house for us to live. All right, look, we're running down. We've only got about 6 minutes left. So let's. I need to go on to, I suppose, more modern tech. And you wanted to raise the ugly specter of child surveillance, didn't you, Sam?
Well, not so much child surveillance, but you know, I mean, it's the bits we were talking about earlier, these little monitoring systems. And I mean, it's a US report that's been out. But you know, sort of the ones that check the breathing and the pulse and like little socks now that will do all sorts of different bits to keep an eye on your baby. And I think it's the FDA pretty much saying that parents are low-hanging fruit. So it's, I mean, this is a quote from an analyst. It's unsurprising that new parents are seduced into buying new gadgets for their babies. And as technology evolves, there's a growing array of monitoring products. Some guy called Ben Wood from CCS Insight. But yeah, it's those, going back to the health monitoring stuff and the recommendation that they should be FDA approved because it's not helpful for the majority of babies.
Well, you're actually going down a different path to what I was expecting. I was expecting, because one of the sponsors for the DadCon that's coming up, we've been looking at people who do child monitoring services, and I thought you were going to go down keeping track of your kids in police state. But I suppose you're just a little bit young for that, right? But Kevin, do you monitor your children from the police aspect? I don't mean to take it away from you, Sam, but I understand the collecting of the data is a bad thing, but let's to take it that one step further. What about monitoring your kids as they get older? Kevin, do you have an app to watch your 7-year-old or 8-year-old girl?
No, I don't. Now, she has a tablet. It's an Amazon Fire tablet, and it's one of the kids' versions that's locked down. So she can't stumble out onto YouTube and see, you know, beheading videos or anything. As she gets older and starts to get interested in new technology, I don't know. I'll probably have to figure out, you know, make that decision at that point.
That's the double end of this. Sam's talking about, I assume you're talking more about collection of data of your children, right, Sam?
No, I mean, it was pretty much the stuff we'd covered early on. It's more a case of the health products that are designed as, you don't know if your baby's dying unless you buy this.
Oh, okay. So scare tactics.
The scare tactics, and almost the case of they're not helpful and they don't go through any of the medical approval process. And it was literally just a case on that.
Some of those like web connected devices, like baby monitors and stuff. The other thing to keep in mind is a lot of those companies, they're not tech companies and they don't use proper security. Mm. So there are lots of, I guarantee you, if you knew how to search for the right IP in your neighborhood with your home Wi-Fi, you would probably be able to find at least one baby monitor that you could log into and watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's particularly when you consider that people are much more savvy today about locking down their Wi-Fi, but, you know, you're still going to find that clown that's got admin, aren't you?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay. And all the remote access stuff that even if people aren't on your Wi-Fi, I mean, I think we got bought, I think it was a cat or it was a something that you then had to sign up for an account with this company. And the selling point of it was that sort of whoever's at work could log into this account and say stuff through this little animal. Oh. And I'll admit, I've not unwrapped that because I don't really want to sign up with all of my little girl's details to some company that I don't know them from Adam. And the idea that, yeah, what if they got hacked? I don't know what their security's like. I mean, my home Wi-Fi, I've changed all the passwords, but it's nothing special. But their security, I don't want somebody to randomly hack that and start be able to say things in my little girl's bedroom.
True. Okay, well, look, this is the 1-minute warning, fellas. I'm going to quickly go through you. Who is the worst offender for buying crap in your house? Ben, is it you or your wife?
Probably me. My wife researches. She's good.
Okay, Kevin, you or your wife?
Oh, I buy the most expensive crap. My wife just buys the most crap.
And finally, with you, Sam.
Definitely me on every count.
Yeah, I don't know. We kind of mix and match. Okay, that's the end of the show, folks. That wraps it up. Thanks, fellas. Thank you for joining me on tonight's show. So say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, follow us on Twitter at SadPod. Special thanks to Micah and me for super happy fun day. And everybody have a super happy fun day.